But we'll see. So it's Easter season. And one of the really cool things about Easter season is it's really intertwined with another big holiday called Passover. And the Passover is considered to be the central event of the Old Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures. And the two are just so connected. And a lot of our symbols, like we have a lot of churches will talk about sacraments. A lot of Protestant churches talk about two sacraments. We call them ordinances here in the Church of God. But they are communion and they are baptism. And we get to do both of those. Now, the Church of God, just side note, we have a third one, foot washing, which weirds some people out. But we're going to give an opportunity to practice that on Maundy Thursday this year. So it's not required. But we have these three ordinances. So we get to do two of them today, which is very exciting. And they have their roots. They don't just start with Jesus. They have their roots. And they're especially tied to the Exodus, when Moses was the deliverer used by God to set the slaves of Israel free from the slavery in Egypt. And we have those symbols as the cup originally came from the Passover and the blood of the lamb. The waters, the sea was parted. People went through the waters and they passed out. So that they passed through to the other side. They made their way out. So Exodus is way out. And again, this is just an incredible story. And because we're doing those two things today, communion and baptism, which have such deep meaning, I thought about a different order, because today we're going to do the prequel. So we're not going to talk about the Exodus today much. We're going to back up and do the prequel. Next week we'll do Exodus, so hopefully you come back, because we'll talk about that more in detail about where we get communion and baptism. But I wanted to keep it in order. This message comes from a primary source recommended to me by my lovely wife, Jenny Miller. It is a podcast by The Bible Project, and it's called The Exodus Way. And specifically, this one is episode 3, How Did Israel End Up in Egypt? So that is our question today. Again, this is a little bit of a prequel, but it's so exciting and great, and I just feel like the Lord keeps confirming that this is the thing for us to do today. So how did they end up in slavery in Egypt? How did Israel get there? So we're going to look at that story today. Exodus is the second book of the Bible. Does anybody know what the first book of the Bible is? Genesis. All right. Gold star for you if you know that. If you don't know much about the Bible, that's fine. We try to make it pretty easy to understand here. But the first, we're going to go back to the first book, Genesis. And to do a very quick recap, in Genesis, it was in the beginning where the Lord creates the universe. And it says that what the Lord created was good, with one exception. He created male and female, and he said it was very good. So the Lord looked at Adam and Eve, man and woman, said very good. And they have life, and they have responsibility, and they have freedom. Now, their responsibility is to name animals, have dominion, take care of a garden, and they have freedom except for one rule. Don't eat the forbidden fruit. Don't eat fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Enter a serpent that we call Satan. We see Satan's work or the devil's work in there, but the serpent comes in and he gets them to question this one rule. They look at the fruit. They see that it's pleasing to the eye. Eve takes it, eats it, gives it to her husband. He takes it and he eats it. And then they feel naked and ashamed. They hide from God. So God goes out and asks, where are you? And when he tracks them down, he asks them, who told you were naked? They have an interchange and they're banished because of what they set in motion was not good. And so they are sentenced to life outside of the garden. It's going to be more difficult for them because of bringing in sin and rebellion and all that came in with that. Now, the serpent is given a punishment too, or given a prophecy. And it is that one day, the woman's offspring is going to crush its head. It's going to bite its heel, but the woman's offspring is going to crush its head. So there we go. Things are set in motion. Adam and Eve have three kids, three males that are mentioned. And then we have some space there. That leads us to 10 generations, Noah. Noah has three sons that are named. The world is getting so wicked, everything is just going off kilter. It's going off the rails. So there's this big flood, but not everything is destroyed. The Lord provides salvation, provides saving through an ark and by speaking to a man named Noah. So Noah and his family are saved through the waters and the ark and animals. So after Noah, we have a lot of things that happen. We're going to fast forward to the Tower of Babel. What is babbling? Blah, 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 right? Like just saying nonsense words. Well, it comes from the Tower of Babel. Because what happens is people are coming together and there's a lot of pride and they're like, now we can put ourselves on equal ground with God. So they're building this tower about their own glory, feeling like they're self-sufficient. Then their language gets scrambled and they start to babble. When they're hearing other languages, it sounds like nonsense. So then that leads to scattering and people scatter all over the world. And then where the story picks up after Babel scatters is 10 generations after Noah. There's another guy with three sons and his name is Terah. And he has three sons. One of those sons is named Abram. Now, Abram is more commonly known as Abraham. So if you hear me say Abram or Abraham, they are the same person. So keep that in mind. So we're going there and we're going to start in Genesis 11:31. Terah took his son Abram. I almost did it there. Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of his son Abram. And together they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. Now with some background, this is fascinating. Now, just so you know, the name Sarai, it means princess. And that's going to come in the story later. But they're going to this place. It says that they are in Ur in the land of the Chaldeans. Now, the land of the Chaldeans is Babylon, or also Babel. So here we go. They're kind of around in this area around Babel or Babylon, which is what it would later be called. And they're in a place called Ur is the name of their city. Now, this is fascinating because Ur in Hebrew sounds a lot like the Hebrew word fire or furnace. Isn't that fascinating? The Lord is calling these Abram and his family out of the furnace and into the land of Canaan. Now, Canaan will later go by a different name. Today we're going to call it the Promised Land. All right, so here we go. It's before Abraham's dad was going to the Promised Land. And he sets out to leave Babel behind, leave the furnace behind, but he stops. For some reason, he doesn't get all the way there. He stops and he settles and he waits. And while they're in Haran, Terah dies. And that's where we're going to pick up with our story of Abraham. So Genesis 12:1. Now that the scriptures really shift here at 12:1. This is very important. We talk about this a lot at Meridian because we talk about blessing others, and it's rooted in this. The Lord said to Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. That's not very specific, is it? How many of you want to get called to a place to be determined later? Like, I want to know where I'm going, don't you? For some of us who are especially good planners or organizers, this is terrifying. But he says, go to a place, to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. All right, so we have that blessing there. The Lord continues, I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. That's an incredible promise. This is going to be worldwide for everyone. So Abram went. That's a great sentence. Abram went. The Lord tells him he's going to show him a place to be determined, but he goes, as the Lord had told him, and Lot was with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. So that's good. The problem is he's 75 years old, Sarai's 65 years old, and they have no kids yet. Now, we know from the Bible, like the ancient genealogies, the ages get weird, but they're still old for this time, and it seems like it might be too late. So there's a little bit of a problem. He's going to be this great nation, but they don't have any kids yet. Sarai's name's Princess, so she's perfectly named. We see what they're going to do, and they set out. And you know where they go? They go to Canaan. They go to the promised land. And they go there, and they build an altar to the Lord. And then they go to another place in the promised land, and they build another altar to the Lord. No kids yet, but so far, so good. Isn't this exciting? Abram's already in the promised land. He's just got to wait on a child to come, and the promise will be settled. But like all of life, there's a problem. Genesis 12:10 tells us, "Now there was a famine in the land." Now this is a fascinating question about this story. Abram is in the promised land right there. He's building altars to the Lord. He's doing great. He's being blessed. He doesn't have the kids yet, but there's a famine. And one of the questions is this a test for Abram? Is this to see whether in famine he's going to believe, I know that there's a famine right now, but the Lord will provide. I trust him. Just as I trusted him to leave home and come to the promised land, will I trust him still? Is he being tested here? Maybe. Will the Lord provide in a famine? Well, the rest of it, Genesis 12:10 goes on to say, Abram took it into his own hands. So Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. Now, throughout this message, I think it's going to be very evident that it's disappointing that we can't read this text in Hebrew, because English translations are way different. We miss things so often if we don't know the Hebrew and how things are tied together so powerfully by the scriptures. So Abram's going down, and that word sojourn, this is a verb. The word is ger. Will you say that with me? Ger. Ger. Maybe we could make it sound like a pirate or whatever. We're going to go into, this is more important because this is the verb form, that word for sojourn. It can go a lot of different ways. But what we're more interested in today is the noun form, which is gar. Say that with me, gar, gar. All right, sounds like we do have some pirates here. I like it. So gar, we'll keep that in mind, but this word for sojourn, because it could be translation, gar, it could go a lot of ways. We'll get into that a little bit later. But there is more clarity in the Hebrew text than there are English translations. So let's go to Genesis 12:11. When he was about to enter Egypt, this is Abram, he said to his wife Sarai, "I know well that you are a woman beautiful in appearance." Again, this language right here too, it mirrors the language of the forbidden fruit. They looked and saw that the fruit was pleasing to the eye. So now we have Sarah almost as the forbidden fruit. Isn't that fascinating? So Abram is ready. He's afraid. He knows that just like Adam and Eve took and ate, Pharaoh might take her too. And that could be catastrophic to Sarai's husband. So he, again, is he going to trust the Lord? He's going to come up with a plan. So he comes up with a plan, and let's see what that is. Pharaoh treated Abram well for her sake. I'm just going to summarize it. What was Abram's plan? His plan was to say, tell Pharaoh that you're just my sister. It was half true. She's a half sister, but he was being deceitful. So now who's Abram's role in this story? The serpent, right? He's getting crafty. He's scheming. Talked about the schemes of the devil the last couple weeks. This is Abram coming up with a scheme to fool Pharaoh. And Pharaoh does take Sarah. So who's he like in the story? He's like Adam and Eve, right? He takes. He sees she's beautiful. And Abram's scheme works because Pharaoh treated Abram well for Sarai's sake. And Abram acquired sheep and cattle, male and female donkeys, male and female servants, and camels. So he's getting rich here off of his scheme. So is God blessing his scheme? Or is he just like getting rich because he was deceitful? There's a lot of moral complexity in this, isn't there? Now, the authors of Genesis don't come out and say, this is how the Lord blessed him. They don't. And they also don't come out and say, this was wrong what he did. We're left for our own to wrestle with this text and to see the consequences and his behaviors and how who's like Adam and Eve and who's like the serpent and who's like the fruit. We've got the pattern. Genesis isn't telling what's wrong and what's not, but we see what's going on here. So here, Abram is getting wealthy by his own schemery. Sometimes schemes work, or they look like they work, because he's getting wealthy here. And again, what's the Lord supposed to do? Keep in mind, this is the first thing they're doing after this promise. He's already promised to bless them, and here we go. Abram is very, very flawed, because he does it out of self-preservation. Think about what he's doing. He's saying, I got to protect my own self, but Sarai, I'm going to allow you to be exploited. So he puts her in danger to save his own neck, and what's God going to do? I mean, he's kind of trafficking her or doing something really bad. I think all of us would agree that what he's doing to his wife is awful. What's the Lord going to do? Flawed people are the only people he has to work with. So again, this is a morally complex story. Genesis 12, 16 tells us that because Pharaoh gave him, he made him rich. Let's go to Genesis 12, 17. But the Lord plagued Pharaoh. You hear shades of anything? Again, this is a prequel. Same word. I mean, our English translations are all different. That's why I use New King James here. But same word used in Exodus. The Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. Was it Pharaoh's fault? Not exactly. I mean, Abram was the one really doing the wrong here. So there's this plague. And then Pharaoh asked to Abram, what have you done? Which is what the Lord asked Adam and Eve. So now Pharaoh's almost in the position of God. Isn't this wild? What have you done? And then Pharaoh sends them away. Again, it's a prequel, because Pharaoh would come a little bit later, another Pharaoh, and send some people away over plagues. Fascinating. Let's fast forward to the next major thing, because this is where it gets a little better. Genesis 15:6. This gets repeated in the New Testament even. God reaffirms that promise, even though he's been a schemer, even though he's done some dirty tricks. And it says, Abram believed the Lord, and God credited it to him as righteousness. The Lord also said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to take possession of it. Similar language would be echoed throughout the rest of the Hebrew scriptures, only the Lord, his identity is, I'm the one who brought you out of Egypt into the land to take possession. Same land. So here we have Abram going from Babylon to promised land to Egypt, back to promised land. And then this pattern would continue to repeat as later, way into the future, the kids would go back, the later generations would go back to Babylon for exile. Fascinating story. So the Lord is identifying himself as the deliverer. He's the one who brought him out despite his own character flaws. And he told him, count the stars. Count them. That's what your descendants are going to be like. You don't have kids yet, but count them. You can count the stars and count on having children. But there's some bad news. Genesis 15:13 tells us the Lord delivered this bad news for later generations. Know for certain that your offspring will be sojourners. There's that word again, sojourners. What do you think that word is? Anybody remember? Gar. Gar. Your offspring will be gars. It's a plural form of it. In a land that is not theirs. And will be servants there, and they will be afflicted for 400 years. Now we could call them sojourners, immigrants, refugees, foreigners, the outcasts. There are a lot of different ways we could translate this, but the idea is clear about Gar. It's like some sort of an immigrant or refugee, somebody who is a foreigner and is very vulnerable in another place. As we know the story, if you know the story of Exodus, they were vulnerable, it says here, for 400 years. They were exploited for 400 years. But this is the story of how Israel ended up in Egypt. Princess Sarai started to get itchy too. She was getting worried because she didn't have any children. So once again, she thought we should just take this into our own hands. Now, do you remember what Abram acquired in Egypt? Slaves, yes, sir, male and female servants. One of those was an Egyptian female slave named Hagar. Hagar, if that's a name, it's at least a title. So what do you think Hagar means? The immigrant, the outcast, the refugee. It could be any of those. But we have Hagar. So she takes Hagar and she says, go ahead, Abram, take. Abram saw that she was pleasing to the eye and he took forbidden fruit again. Now, after this happens, Sarai gets bitterly jealous and it gets really ugly, as you can imagine. Now, again, the Genesis doesn't tell us what they did was wrong, but we see the consequences of what happens from their behaviors. And Sarai gets really mad and goes to Abram. And once again, he hands this woman over to be mistreated. He'd already handed Sarai over, so he hands Hagar over again. A lot easier probably this time. Somebody's not protected. So he hands her over. She's mistreated, and she takes off, and she ran off. And she gets about halfway to, she's on the way to Egypt. Now, we see a lot of character problems so far in this story, don't we? It's morally complex, for sure. But here, in the next part, we see the Lord's character, because when she's out in the desert, there's a Hagar, an immigrant, who's out in the desert, pregnant and alone. Can you be any more vulnerable than that? I'm not sure if you can. And this is what happens. Genesis 16:8. The Lord sends a servant who says to her, Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? God's question again to Adam and Eve. Where have you come from? Where are you going? Now remember, Exodus is the way out. So we're asking way out, way in. The angel added later, I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count. Isn't that amazing? Now, Hagar is included on the promise. Not only do Abram and Sarai have this promise of descendants like the stars, too numerous to count, now Hagar has that promise. She had a child named Ishmael, which means God will hear because of her experience here. How did Israel end up in Egypt? Three generations later, the great-grandsons of Abram, the brothers are fighting, and they sell one of their brothers, Joseph, to Ishmaelites, who carry him to Egypt, which would set all the events in motion for the Exodus to happen. And that is the story of how Israel ended up in Egypt. Now, isn't that fascinating? Isn't that an incredible prequel? This story is not fair, is it? When sin comes into the world, every fairness is just thrown off. How could God possibly make things fair at this point? It's not fair to Sarai that she was exploited. It's not fair to Hagar that she has to go back to. It's not fair to Abram's later generations who will be in slavery because of other stuff that's happened. This is not fair. But we see over and over what we see is the character of God, the mercy of God, that God is our deliverer who will come because the Lord hears the cries of the oppressed and God brings mercy. Genesis 16:13. We're going to go back to what Hagar said. And I'll have to say this morning in our Bible reading plan, we read in Hebrews 11, and it talks so much about this, so I encourage you to read it. Hebrews 11, where it talks about Abram and the foreign, they were foreigners, they were sojourners, because this language is repeated. And I think one other thing that has really reinforced this morning, without my knowledge, Roberto and his family came. Roberto is from Haiti, and he came last spring, about a year ago. Him and his family came as refugees from Haiti. And they've been away, they moved away, but he came back today, as we see, like in the flesh, the Lord sending him back on this day. So God bless you, Roberto, and Esther and Kimberly. We're so grateful to have you here. It's our honor to host you here. But that's what the Lord is doing. So this is what Hagar says. And to me, these are some of the most incredible lines of the Hebrew scriptures. Hagar gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. For she said, I have seen the one who sees me. You ever feel like Hagar? You ever feel like the outcast? You ever feel like you don't belong? You ever feel like an outsider? There is a God who sees you. And your life may not be fair, but there is a God who sees and hears, and he is a God who's merciful, and he will work in some way that is incredible. The gospel is good news. I read a line right after I wrote this too from F.F. Bruce, a scholar. He was writing about Paul, but he said, the good news of Jesus, Jesus' gospel was good news for the outcast. It's like, amen. It's good news for the outcast. And listen, the last scriptures that we're going to read here, and I'm going to ask our worship team to come back up here. But the last scriptures come from Jesus, the one who will tie this story all together, because he's the deliverer that we've always been waiting for. But this is what he says about people who will inherit the kingdom of God. If you are a follower of Jesus, we have to take this very seriously. If you're not, we're so glad you're here. Hope you follow Jesus, but regardless, we hope we bless you. But this is what Jesus says about himself in Matthew 25:35. He's talking about his identity. He said, for I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. And they were confused, the people who heard this. When did we do this? And he's like, when you saw me like that. When the Lord appears, the Messiah right now is among us. And he often appears as Hagar, the outcast, the sick, the hungry, the stranger. How will we reply to the Messiah who is among us? Because he appears often, not as one who is beautiful or powerful or exploits others, but as one who is vulnerable, as one who is a stranger. How will we react to the Messiah? Let me close with this blessing. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May he turn his face toward you and give you peace.